Sup, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the New York Knicks being a better basketball team than the Chicago Bulls this season, to the Bulls absolutely destroying the Knicks every time they play them this season. It's Adam Mawala. Adam, how's it going?
I don't know about destroying them. I mean, I think this past Saturday was a pretty good performance from the Bulls. They showed out for Derrick Rose night, and they just hit every three in the world. The other game that was at the Garden, the Bulls literally won thanks to Coby White having a lot of hair and getting fouled in
the
hair.
Yeah, that was
so they won by 1 point. I mean, that was...
Yeah, that one sucked.
And then also like a Jalen Brunson shot that was three quarters of the way into the net and rimmed out. So dominating is probably, you know, a strong term. Sadly, I don't think we bet on the head-to-head games this year. I can't recall. I think I wouldn't have because I...
No, because we were like, we did it out of politeness to you. Yeah. We were like, oh, no, we shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
Would have been the year to do it. But Indeed. Alas, we've got it's a good situation, right? You know, even if the Bulls can't be good, at least they can be good against my favorite team. So you'll always have that.
Yeah, I'd rather have a good team in general.
Well, we're talking about basketball, but we've got more basketball to discuss. So let's get ready to talk about the basketball in the Thiel Memorial Locker Room. A place that, you know, is always performing at its peak. It's just always at optimal services.
Yeah, recent renovation, I heard.
Ooh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Upgrades.
You know what actually did ultimately go through a renovation recently?
Yes, there were some growing pains, but a renovation has happened on Patreon. And thank you to our patrons, and most specifically, our producer-level patrons who have bared with us, bore with us? What's the past term of bear with? Bored? Bared? Bared. I think bared.
Sure, let's go with that. But shout out to our producer-level patrons. Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry's 2-point buzzer beater was ridiculous.
Bang!
Hi, Trish, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Furuli. And yes, as Adam said, we were dealing with the Patreon growing pains. I'm going to go in and try to do refunds and stuff so that you actually got charged the proper amounts for the month. So I'm going to get into the nitty-gritty of Patreon, and we'll figure it out. But thank you for everyone. It's all now set up properly, and things should be good going forward. Sign up for our new tiers. We've got Bang, we've got Double Bang, and we've got Triple Bang, which lets you know all the stuff that we are doing. But yes, thank you to those producer-level patrons. And you know who else I would like to thank?
Probably our sponsor. And before we get to that, I do believe we had a recent double bang moment from Mike Breen.
Oh, there was a game with a double bang.
I think it was the Christmas game between the Lakers and the Warriors. I feel like there was a moment in that game where, I don't know if it was Steph or LeBron, but someone hit a big shot, and I believe we got a double bang. I'm going to look into this, and I'll share.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I was still just riding the high of how incredibly awesome the Knicks win on Christmas was. That was just, it was very fantastic, and I got to give a shout out to my baby for getting tired just at the right time where nap time was approaching, and it was like, oh, let me take her into a quiet room, and it was as the fourth quarter was beginning, so I got to kind of, you know, rock her to sleep and watch the game.
Silently screaming to yourself. Yeah, exactly.
It was, so the end of that game was very intense and stressful. There were these ridiculous rebounds from Josh Hart and, like, these awesome kick-out passes and threes and dunks, and Mikal Bridges was going nuts. Like, it was a very, very intense game down the stretch, and there were multiple times where I had to go, like, let's go. Yeah, let's go. Like, just silent fist bump. And the fact that I did not wake her, given the intensity of the game, I think really speaks volumes to my dedication as a father.
I like it.
So, yes, our sponsor is Shaker & Spoon. If you want to celebrate something like a big Knicks win on Christmas, you can go to shakerandspoon.com/horse. You'll get $20 off a box. The boxes are usually $40, $50. And these boxes help you make fancy cocktails, but they make it easy. All you got to do is get the booze, and then they give you the instructions and the ingredients to make 4 servings of 3 different drinks. And it's cool because all the drinks will be very different. And then you have that knowledge going forward, and you can be a fancy person forever. So go to shakerandspoon.com/horse, get a box, and be fancy today.
Yeah, and also, like, if you're doing the dry January thing, or if you don't drink at all, I think they would be pretty good as mocktails too. I would have to.
Yes,
think. I've been dabbling in the mocktail business recently. I've never done a dry January. I'm not like a huge drinker anyway, but I was like, I'm going to see if I can do it this year. And there are so many options. It's amazing how many options there are now compared to like 5 or 10 years ago in terms of non-alcoholic beers and mocktail options. Yeah. So I'd say even if you're keeping it cool this month, still a good time to check out Shaker and Spoon.
Totally. I think America's finally catching up to the world's speed, where mocktails and non-alcoholic beer and stuff are getting to be more legitimate and less like, oh, what's wrong with you, pussy? At least there's like actual stuff now, which is cool. And also, liquors that are alcohol-free and meant to taste like it are very convincing now.
Mm-hmm.
I did a live show in Philly, and Steven, my guest, had an alcohol-free beer that was delicious, according to him. And then I had a alcohol-free Moscow Mule that was made with, like, you know, pretend floral gin or whatever with no alcohol in it. And it tasted exactly the same. So, if you want to pick up a bottle of non-alcoholic alcohol to do Shaker and Spoon, have at it. So, yeah, that's our sponsor, shakerandspoon.com/horse. Now, unless you're listening on Patreon, where you get access to ad-free episodes and early release episodes, you're going to hear words from a few sponsors who help us not be in the red making this show. And after that, we will get into the rest of the episode of Horse. But if you're listening on Patreon, you don't hear those. You just get right to it. All right, Adam, we're back. What's going on in your busy life?
I'm going to let you tell us what's going on in your life while a siren passes on my side.
Beautiful. So I've got all the same stuff. Nothing new has been added, but it's coming up closer. So got shows, three shows in February, Hartford, Baltimore, and Richmond. Hartford is a TNO show, and then the other two are half TNO, half Potterless. And then I've got a show in Houston in March, and then I'm doing a big Midwest run in April, St. Paul, Milwaukee, Des Moines, Chicago, Columbus, and Cleveland. And then I'll be in Montreal and Buffalo in May. So if you're going to get tickets to any of those shows, head to shubes.es/tour. Very excited about it. Some of the tickets are going pretty fast, so make sure you lock it in, because I think I'm thinking the Richmond one is probably going to sell out. So head on over, get that. It's going to be a fun time at all the shows. Hartford, I'm going to be joined by the folks from Monster Donut. Baltimore, I'm going to be joined by Sherry Guo. And Richmond, I'll be joined by Johnny Frolickstein. So fun times all around.
All right, and perfect timing, because I do believe the siren has left the building.
Yeah, I can't hear it.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, if you're listening to this when it came out, I hope I saw you in Chicago, and I hope you said hello, and that I said hello back and was very nice. I don't know why I wouldn't be, but, you know.
Wild if you didn't.
Fuck off! Very, very on brand for everything people know about me. All right, so upcoming stuff, as you're listening to this, on Wednesday, January 29th, I'm going to be headlining the Laughing Skull Lounge in Atlanta, Georgia. I already know there's at least one or two horse listeners coming to that, but join the party. On that same Friday, I'm going to be back up in the Northeast headlining a show in Glens Falls, New York. That's in like the Albany, Saratoga area. It's at the Park Theater, which is a beautiful venue up there. The show the following night got rescheduled, so I'm now in Bennington, Vermont on March 1st instead of February 1st. Everything else is the same. I've got Dallas, Texas at the Dallas Comedy Club on February 14th and 15th if you're looking for some Valentine's Day plans. I've got Boulder, Colorado on the 21st and 22nd of February. I've got the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, New Jersey on March 13th. Last Best Comedy Club in Bozeman, Montana on May 30th, and Brad Garrett's Comedy Club in Las Vegas, Nevada from June 2nd through the 8th. So that's 7 consecutive nights at that club, and as always, more stuff to be added soon.
Fun. Do we have an NB Q&A?
Kind of. Yes, we do. And it's more of like an offer than a question, but I'm going to share it. And I hope the person who wrote in doesn't mind. But the message says, "Hi, I'm Jay. I am a 12-year-old who loves your podcast so much. I have a crochet business called Jellies by Jay and was wondering if I could make you horsemen jerseys. They are custom, however you want, names, teams, whatever. Do you want them? If so, what sizes should I make them? And how can I give them to you?" So this person is offering to make us crocheted horsemen jerseys. And so what I want to do, because Jay also mentioned that they could like make jerseys for other people that obviously they would have to pay for. But I want to give Jay a shout out, because as we're winding down on our jerseys, this could be a fun thing to offer, like to give someone else some business who's running their own small business or Etsy business or that sort of thing. So Jay, if you're listening to this, we're going to email you back. I can't speak for you, Shubes, but I mean, would I like a horseman jersey? Absolutely, I would.
Yes. I don't even, a crochet jersey, like, is that like if I'm like wearing a blanket? Like, that's...
I don't know. That's kind of what I want to know, because I have so many follow-up questions, because when I think of something crocheted, number one, I think of it as being very time-consuming, and number two, I almost think of it as being like, You know when they have those little jerseys that you can use as like a koozie over a drink?
Right, right, right.
Like maybe something like that.
Yeah, and I have like a, I have a hand, it's, no one can, this is a podcast, but I have like a hand crocheted like sweater.
Yeah.
Someone back in the Potterless days made me like a custom Weasley sweater with an S on it for Shubes. And yeah, that was like crocheted, but like it's like wearing like a proper sweater. So, it, you know, it just feels like you're wearing a sweater or a cardigan or something. So I guess like that, but in basketball jersey would be sick. That yeah, would be super cool.
I mean, probably even just like to display more so than to wear. I mean, you're not going to like run 3-on-3 sweating in
no,
a crocheted.
But like, I don't know, man. I wear it jersey around the house. It sounds fun.
Sure.
It's
yeah,
like a nice cozy way to snuggle up and watch a basketball game. Sounds
yeah
delightful.
So Jay, thank you so much for the offer. That's incredibly kind. Also, congratulations on having your own business at 12. That's ridiculous and very
yeah, at 12 I was
cool,
like getting a bowl cut. Like that's all yeah, I was doing at 12.
Same.
I wow, wild.
Yeah. So Jay, awesome stuff. We're going to respond to you. And then if it all works out and you want to, you know, provide horsemen jerseys for other people, we're happy to send them your way because it's pretty awesome thing that you're doing.
Yeah, well, obviously, whenever those come through, we'll have to take photos of us wearing them, put them on Instagram, and then let people link it up if they want to get one
yeah,
of their own.
Absolutely. So that's what we got.
Fantastic. Delightful. Well, now let's get into Full Court Press. Get it like the news?
I do. And news there is.
News there is. The Jimmy Butler saga continues. It continues. And here's what's wild. We had the Heat very low on our drama draft rankings. What were we doing?
Yeah, who took them?
I think you did with like, it was in the bottom half, which is ridiculous.
Maybe I'm creating this memory and I could obviously go back and listen to the archive of it.
Sure.
I thought that whoever drafted them, and I guess it was me, mentioned them in the context of like, Jimmy Butler's not getting any younger.
Yeah.
And if he feels like he can't win here, could that be a source of drama? And clearly yeah, it has been an enormous source of drama. I mean, we've gone back and forth with like there being an initial report from Shams that then Jimmy Butler's agent got very upset about. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then Pat Riley, who's the, I guess, is he yeah, the, what is his official job? President of basketball?
He's the yeah, president of basketball operations, I guess. Yeah.
He came out and officially was like, unequivocally, we are not interested in trading Jimmy Butler. That's not a thing. But it also had the same vibe as like, if you know a couple is fighting a lot and then they have like a very happy Instagram post, you're like, oh, they're going to break up 3 days from now. And yeah, that's kind of what's happening.
Well, yeah. And then it got to the point where like people were questioning Jimmy Butler's effort level in games. Then there was public things about him saying he lost the joy of basketball. And then a reporter said, do you think you can find that joy here? And he said, probably not. And Jimmy yeah, intentionally said, you know, when he was saying it before this question, he was like, whether that's here or somewhere else, and like took a bit of a pause and change in tone when he said that, mm-hmm, like super obvious. So then the Heat suspended him for 7 days.
Yeah.
Seven games.
Yeah, because in the modern NBA, 7 days would just be 2 games.
Right, right. So it's 7 games, which for his contract is, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
I think it's like $500,000 or something. Like, it's just a ridiculous amount of money. And he's getting suspended for 7 games for, you know, behavior detrimental to the team. And now they're trying to trade him. There were reports that he said he would go anywhere except for Miami. He just wants to contribute to any other team. And then a couple days later, Chris Haynes, I believe, reported like, there have been some teams that have been told, please don't trade for Jimmy Butler, which is like a thing that sometimes will happen with these trades is like, yo, this guy's not going to sign a contract with your team, so you probably shouldn't do it. So it's like kind of helping, but also kind of like trying to direct where you go.
Well, and those sorts of teams wouldn't anyway. Like the Wizards are not going to trade for Jimmy Butler because why yeah, would they? You know what I mean? Like only
right,
a contender is going to trade for someone like that. But you do have to wonder, and I've always been a pro Jimmy Butler guy from his days on the Bulls when he, you know, kind of turned into the star that he is now. It is kind of like a James Harden, Kevin Durant-esque track record of him wanting to go to certain places and then falling out of favor there or deciding that he doesn't want to be there anymore. And like, how desirable is a person with that kind of vibe and personality
mm-hmm,
if you just feel yeah, like at the drop of a hat, they're going to be like, I don't want to be here anymore.
Right. It's tough. And I think on the basketball podcast, Six Trophies by Shea Serrano and Jason Concepcion, they pointed this out really well, which like Shea's point was Jimmy's good enough that, you know, this is going to happen. You just do it. Like, you know, at the end of the run, it's going to end sourly, but like yeah, you try. And look, I mean, he's made every team so much better that he's been on.
Yeah.
And then Jason's point was that like, usually Jimmy is right when he's about these things. Like, he was right that the Sixers should have chosen him over Tobias Harris. He was right that the Timberwolves didn't have their stuff together. And maybe he's right that the Heat are doing it wrong. I mean, like, they have built this team poorly. It's not working out. They made some bad moves. You know, it's not looking great. So, like, yeah, maybe you're right. And, like, he was right about the Bulls and stuff, too. So, like, he's been right at every instance, but also you're not necessarily communicating it in the best way. Like, you, it's like you got the answer right on the math problem, but you look at your work and you didn't, you know, arrive there properly. So
do you see that finals run that they had in the bubble as being just kind of an anomaly and they just like kind of rode a hot streak at the right time?
I think he's a very good player that like really turns it on in the playoffs. Like, you could see it more of a fluke, but like they did it twice.
Right.
Like, they did it.
Yeah. People forget they got there a second time, and like both times they lost pretty handily, but that's still two finals.
Still getting there was ridiculous. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's tough. I think clearly, you know, torches things on the way out and sours and wants things in a very particular way. I think of all the things this time, like, this is the least valid of all of the reasons. Like, I feel like every other time there was external circumstances. This time, he's just mad that the Heat didn't give him the extension. And like, Jimmy, you're good, but you're not worth the money. Yeah. And
well,
the,
he's living up to the name of his coffee company.
Oh, big head, big face, big head.
I thought it was big head. If it's big face, that doesn't make as much sense, but he is a bit of a big head right now.
Let's see. Jimmy Butler.
Might be big coffee. Face.
I think it's big face,
but you
look,
get my point.
You need, yeah, it is big face, but look, if you have a big face, you have a big head. You can't have one without the other. So, yeah.
A big face on a small head would be jarring, to say the
very
least.
Strange, yeah. Very strange. Very strange. But we'll see where he ends up. It's going to be interesting. I'm so shocked that we didn't think to put him higher on our drama draft rankings, because even like this happened before the season, like the lack of extension. I'd have to listen to what we said. I would hope that I said something like, I hope that the Heat just trade him and it's not dramatic, because otherwise there's no justification.
Well, I mean, our next episode after this one will be towards the end of January, which I think will be the final episode before the trade deadline. Like, where do we see as potential landing spots for him? And where do you think would be a good fit if there is one?
It's hard because some of the good fit places don't necessarily have the pieces to trade. Like, Phoenix would be a great fit because they're trying to get rid of Bradley Beal and they make similar amounts of money, but they'd have to attach a ton of picks and stuff for the Heat to want to do it. And I don't think the Suns have that kind of draft capital because they cashed in a bunch of chips for Kevin Durant.
Right.
So I don't know about that. The Lakers is always a looming option, trying to make sure that you can put together a run around LeBron and AD. And I guess they have more draft stuff and some young folk. So I could see the Lakers being there. I know that the Rockets are one that is pretty highly thought of, and it like kind of weirdly works in the timeline where if you do pay Jimmy Butler and then do this extension or whatever, where you have him for like 2 years max, that does kind of work before a lot of the younger guys in the Rockets, you have to start paying them a bunch of money.
Well, it works money wise, but does it work fit wise?
Oh, I mean, basketball fit wise, yes. But like Jimmy Butler and Dylan Brooks on the same team, right. I'm not sure.
Sounds combustible.
The Rockets shouldn't do it, and they should take the approach that my beloved New York Knicks are taking, which is like, no, we're just good, and the vibes are good, so I think they shouldn't do it. And then the Grizzlies, I know, are one that is pretty high up, at least according to the Vegas odds of, like, where will he end up? And I think it's the Grizzlies are in this spot of, like, they got some people they could trade, they got to shake things up, they're not as good as they feel like they should be, and they could at least have more people that the Heat would be interested in, whether that's a Desmond Bain or a Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, there are players that the Grizzlies have that I think that the Heat would want, because I don't think the Heat are a team that ever wants to, like, fully blow it up. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're just going to try to trade for some younger, good players. So those are my thoughts. Do you have any thoughts of potential teams where he might end up?
No, I think those are kind of the people that I, you know, thought of. And to your point, it's like, the Suns would almost be exchanging like one problem for another potential problem. Like, I don't really see it as working.
Yeah,
necessarily.
I mean,
unless
the
they think
is,
it's like, oh, this will keep Durant happy.
I think with the Suns, it's just like Beal is expensive, hurt often, and not particularly good at basketball. At least Jimmy Butler is expensive, hurt slightly less often, and is very good at basketball. So, like, you would be at least upgrading in that regard. I just don't think that they can convince the Heat to do it.
Right. And like, to your point, I think the teams that are playing really well, it's like, why mess with anything? Like the Thunder are nasty and they're playing without Holmgren.
Oh, no, they're fine.
The Cavs are nasty. They have no need for someone like a Jimmy Butler. So it kind of needs to be, the only teams that really make sense are teams that are like, we're pretty sure we're going to make the playoffs, but we're going to be like a lower seed and we're banking on playoff Jimmy.
Yeah. Here's what's really fun is there is a team in each conference that is, I think, of the other team that would make sense for him, which is we thought we were going to be better and we're not doing well. So we got to try to make a push because we're trying to contend now. And those teams are the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Philadelphia 76ers.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Like the Wolves are a disappointment. They got to offload someone. It's not working out. But like, I mean, they have young people that they could trade. Like they could try to just basically trade Randall and DiVincenzo and get Butler in there and then try to switch it up. But like that ended sourly and that didn't work out well. And then the Sixers as well. Like maybe you trade like some of your younger people and try to shake it up, but like, or see if they'll take Paul George and a bunch of picks or something. But yeah, it's very funny that those two teams, like if not for the personal stuff, I would be like, you know, the Sixers could do it. Or the Timberwolves could do it, but like they won't by any means.
Hey, if the Sixers had kept Jimmy the first time around, you never would have met Tobias Harris in an elevator. So
he was so nice. He was so nice. So nice. All right. Other stuff. The Kings fired Mike Brown, and it's a weird situation in Sacramento where they are underperforming, and the question is like, is it because of the players? Mainly, is it De'Aaron Fox's fault? And then they're like, oh, but is it the coach? Like, can we try to bring in a new coach and make it okay? And this is like a normal thing that'll happen. And sometimes coaches who are good, like Mike Brown, he's a two-time coach of the year. Like, sometimes good coaches get fired because before you do the ridiculous thing of trading players and trying to shake all that up, you see, like, maybe do you bring in a new coach and things get fixed. And sometimes, like, good quality coaches get fired. It just happens.
Yeah.
But the way that the Kings did it was super shitty. They had a practice. Then Mike Brown did like his media availability where, you know, the media is there in the practice facility. He did all his interviews and stuff that they'll do on off days. And then they were about to fly up to wherever their next game was. And right before he boards the flight, they let him know, hey, don't get on the plane. You're fired. Which is like, that's ridiculous. Like to make him do this little extra bit of work and media availability and then fire him right before, like what? You didn't want to pay for the plane ticket? Like it's so wild.
No, sadly, I have to make a sad football reference because the Bears did this exact thing with their head coach where like everyone already thought he was getting fired. And rather than be decisive about it, they let the guy march out for his press conference to like take a beating and then give the same canned answers about like, you know, we're going to trust the process and we think we're going to get better next week. And, you know, there's no, we don't plan to make any changes. And even I think the front office was like, yeah, you know, he's our guy. And then literally right after that, they were like, never mind, we are firing. And it reeked of people in the front office not being on the same page. And I get the same impression with the Kings where it seems like they were all having internal meetings.
They released
and hadn't come to a decision. And they were like, well, we've got to let him keep proceeding as the head coach until we've decided that he's not. And then the timing just made it look really shitty. But yeah, I think, first of all, any human being deserves more courtesy than that. But especially someone of the ilk of a Mike Brown. That's a really, it just like makes your organization look bad. So I don't know. I hope it works out for the Kings. They're a likable team. I was very much hoping that DeMar DeRozan would land in a place that was better. And thus far, that has not been the case. Side note, I actually might see the Kings on Sunday in Chicago because before my show at Zany's, the Bulls have a 2:30 start time against the Kings. I think it'd be cool to like go to a game and see DeRozan come back and I'm sure get a big ovation. Also, like, I haven't been to a Bulls game in Chicago in 10 years, so like, if I can do it, why not?
No, totally.
But
yeah, I think it's just making the Kings organization look bad. Basically, every head coach that I can think of came out and was like, this was awful what they did. And then, of course, Michael Malone, coach of the Nuggets, famously got ridiculously fired from the Kings in a bad situation. Like he was, I think he said they have no balls and no class, like something. He called them all out. So like clearly he's got some history there. But yeah, the Kings released some sort of statement that was like the timing was unfortunate, but we were having internal discussions and we made the call at the last minute, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, it's just such a bad look. It's such a bad look for an organization that like repeatedly has had really bad looks when it comes to the hirings and firings of coaching, and it's just tough. So that sucks. But like, Mike Brown will be completely fine. He will get hired whenever he wants to be a coach again. If he wants to take time off, he can. If he wants to get right back into the mix, some team will gladly hire him because he is a good coach and he's a proven coach. It's just crappy what they did. And it really sucked because, kind of like what you said with the Bears thing, I don't think it was as intentional with the Kings, but in his media thing, like, the Kings were on a bit of a losing streak. And he was like, you know, in times like this, we just really got to band together and we have to really, you know, find solace in each other and our camaraderie. Like, he was talking all about like being close and having each other's backs. And then he got fired like 15 minutes later. It's like,
well, to harken back to our last episode with Office Ladies executive producer Cassie Jerkins, there's a famous line from, I think, the first season of The Office where on diversity day, Michael Scott says, "This is an environment of welcoming, and you need to get the hell out of here."
Yeah. Now, let's end it on a happy final note. There was a really heartfelt thing that I saw across NBA internet spheres with Anthony Edwards of the Minnesota Timberwolves and a young fan named Luca. So there was this young fan. I don't know how old he was, but he was quite small, like maybe like 5-6 years old, but he's this little guy, Luca, who has been fighting cancer. And I don't know if this was through a Make-A-Wish or some sort of similar thing, but there's basically this video, which we'll link to, where he is kind of in the, you know, back locker roomish area with the Timberwolves. And he has this sign that says like, step one, beat cancer, step two, become the next MJ. And it says to-do list at the top. It's really sweet. And he has like this bag of orange wristbands, kind of like those, you know, silicone bracelets. And
like the Livestrong bracelet.
Yeah, I was trying to find any way to not say it because that guy sucks.
So. Yeah, he sucks, but like what it stood for was
sure. But they, like him and his family are talking to Anthony Edwards, and I don't know what the bracelet says, but he's got like some sort of message on it. And Anthony Edwards like is, you know, being really nice to the kid, signs his sign, takes pictures with him, gives him a hug, wears the bracelet. And then he says, he promises the kid, I'm going to wear this every day for the rest of my career, which is awesome. And then he takes Luca into the Timberwolves locker room and has him like give a bracelet to everyone else. So he meets Naz Reid and Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo. Like all the guys are there and, you know, giving him the wristband. They're giving him fist bumps and hugs, and he's like taking pictures with everybody. Like, it was just a really cool, heartfelt moment. It's so awesome that I see, for the most part, NBA players, athletes in general, but NBA players especially, are just like so good with kid fans and even adult fans. Like, there was the Jeremy Grant thing where this woman flew all the way from Japan to see him. She like does it once a year, and he like recognized her from really far in the stands. Steph Curry recently like threw shoes up to a kid in the crowd, and then some adult caught them and was trying to get him, and he was like, yo, give it to the kid, like yelled at him. So
Trae Young, after that wild half-court game winner, also gave one of his shoes to a kid.
Yeah, so it's really cool that these players recognize like how meaningful it can be for these kids, and it's just awesome to see the things that they're doing. And we'll see if Ant really wears that for the rest of his career. But regardless, like,
I hope so. I mean, like, why say it if you don't mean it?
Right. But like, big move for him to say, like, what if it breaks? Like, it's that's what I'm always surprised when players wear those little kind of braces. I guess. Yeah. Hopefully he can get more than one. But like, big promise to make. Hopefully he fulfills. But regardless, it was just like a really cute, sweet thing to see, and I like seeing it. And if you want to see more of it, there is a subreddit called NBAW. So it's reddit.com/NBAWW, and it's just all of these cute moments. If you want some basketball adorableness in your life.
You know, it's one of those things where, like, when you're a professional athlete or someone in the profile, famous actor, celebrity, whatever, like, no, you don't technically owe anybody anything. Like, you get to make your own decisions, but the power that you have and the impact that even like small gestures can have on people's lives is something that I would hope most people take seriously. Because even like, you know, obviously I was never in that sort of position where I'm like fighting for my life and meeting a hero of mine. But in the interactions that I've had with athletes over the years when I was a kid at games, like, I remember the times that people were nice to me. And I also remember the times that people were shitty, and like, it does have an impact. So hopefully a lot of athletes appreciate I would say like the privilege that it is to be in a position where like you can have that kind of impact on somebody's life.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. It's very cool. So that will conclude Full Court Press. Get it like the news. And now we can get to your 3-on-3.
1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1. 3-on-3.
Let's do it. For my 3-on-3 today, this probably won't surprise you a whole lot, but I'm going to take a trip down memory lane to give Derek Rose his flowers, a phrase that is especially appropriate for a man with the last name Rose. Now, Rose has been in the news quite a bit of late because the Bulls honored him with Derek Rose Night during a game against your New York Knicks this past weekend, and also announced they will be retiring his number next season. Side note, I find this ridiculous, and it just feels like a money grab from Bulls owner Jerry Reinsdorf to milk this for another year rather than just like do it all at the same time.
I was very confused by it, that it was like, here's the Derrick Rose Day where we have announced we're going to do a thing, and then next year, a thing. But like,
yeah, and it's also especially silly because like his number has basically been unofficially retired anyway. Like no one has even dared to wear number one since he left, because I think it's just understood like we don't do that here,
right?
So it does kind of reek of them trying to be like, let's milk this for more than it's worth and like have a whole extra. Because the other thing about it is, and I'll reference this later, a ton of people came from really far away to be there this weekend, and presumably not all of those same people will get to come next year. So it's like, it's kind of a weird thing. I hope it doesn't make the jersey retirement feel anticlimactic next year, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. But I do appreciate Derrick Rose was asked, would you ever want a statue here? And he said, the way that they're making statues these days, no.
So funny.
Which is very funny, but also like, I don't think you would have got a statue, Derrick Rose. Like, for the Bulls, you kind of got to win a championship to get a statue.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, if the pedigree is a Michael Jordan statue outside the United Center. Because,
yeah, who has statues for the Bulls?
As far as I know, only Jordan.
Not even Pippen?
No.
That's nuts. Yeah, Derek, you weren't getting a statue,
well,
sir.
Well, of the, I think the only retired numbers for the Bulls are Jordan, Pippen, and it's like one other person. I can't remember if it's like Bob Love, who passed away recently, or Jerry Sloan or somebody like that, like during his time as a player. But it's a very limited number. I'm sure it can be looked up. Are you Googling?
I'm Googling right now. The only statues is Jordan, and then there's two for the Chicago Blackhawks, which is hockey, okay. So rare hockey reference. And then Bulls retired numbers. We've got Jerry Sloan, Bill Russell, because it's the whole NBA, Bob Love, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Phil Jackson, and Jerry Krause, and Red Kerr.
But how do you retire Phil Jackson's number? What's the number?
I don't know. It doesn't have a number, but like sometimes
they just retired a suit.
Yeah, I guess some places will do, like, I think the Knicks have retired like the number of wins that Red Holtzman had, like 713 or like whatever it is.
Yeah.
And some places when it's the announcer, they'll retire. It'll be like a little microphone on a jersey or something. But yeah, maybe for Phil Jackson, it's like, I don't know, ayahuasca or something.
That would suck if when they retired an announcer's jersey that no one was allowed to use a microphone in the stadium. So that
you can only use a bullhorn. Like,
or like, did you see Gladiator 2?
Nah, I didn't.
It was pretty bad. I don't see it. But there are multiple scenes like there are in the first one where someone's like making an announcement to the whole Coliseum without a microphone and everybody miraculously hears it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? How good were the acoustics? There's no way.
This is how I feel in movies sometimes when people give like an impassioned speech and then they like talk like at this volume and it's like a huge like room of people.
Yeah,
it's like,
to a battlefield.
Right, yeah. One person in the back's like, yo, what? What?
Anyway, all right. For today's 3-on-3, I'm going to share my three favorite regular season and postseason moments from Derrick Rose's time on the Bulls, which means that I won't be talking about his 50-point game with the Timberwolves or any of his accomplishments.
Or his
off-court
stuff.
Well, I mean, we can talk about that if you want. The off-court stuff, you know, it doesn't not exist, but it's one of those weird things where, like, there were accusations made. It was a case that ultimately got thrown out, which doesn't mean that, like, you know, it's tricky, right? It's almost like the talking about Kobe Bryant, where, like, it's something that's always there, but when it's ultimately a court case that was, like, dismissed and, like, heard again and dismissed again.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I don't know how to react to it. All I know, I don't know Derrick Rose personally. I certainly know the way people speak about his character and the way, like, I will say that I don't think that for Rose, this is not like a Karl Malone sort of situation.
No,
where it's
Rose,
like, oh, this
one,
is objectively a terrible person. The Rose one, it's hard to say because we don't know. And then the court case got dismissed. So like,
yeah.
I don't know where you land on that sort of stuff. Like, obviously, it's a blemish, and like, I don't know that anyone will know the truth of that. All we have is like what the court decided. So,
yeah, I didn't. It was not fun to deal with because he was on the Knicks when this was happening, like the actual court cases about it, So that was an extra layer of not being fun. And then, yeah, it's always hard with these cases to know, like, did it get thrown out because there wasn't evidence, or did it get thrown out because, like, the rich people paid a ton of money to get it thrown out? So it's tough.
Well, it's hard to say, but I mean, I don't think for this particular situation it was like, oh, there was a silent settlement that happened. Like,
no.
Who knows what sort of shady shit goes on behind the scenes? Nobody knows that.
Yeah. I remember the most frustrating thing about Derrick Rose in it is that he didn't handle himself super well, like, in the court case. Like, he made some sort of, like, flippant remark about what does consent mean and stuff. Like, so there were some things where it was like, even if you didn't do anything wrong, like, you probably could have handled this better, Derrick.
My feeling on that, not to give him an out, is, like, respectfully, I don't think Derrick Rose is, like, super educated.
Correct.
And I think that he was not coached very well on, like, how to respond to things or what to say. Mm-hmm. And I think when, unfortunately, you don't have a great education, the way you articulate things sometimes is, like, not great, or arguably not, like...
Well, famously, didn't he have, like, an SAT score cheating thing about him getting into Memphis, too?
Yeah, there was, and this is, you know, this is not uncommon in college sports, but, yeah, I think what it was, like, it came to light that someone else had taken his SAT or something. There was some sort of, like, shady business done by Memphis to make sure that he was, like, eligible to play for them. So, you know. Yeah.
But anyway, basketball, Derrick Rose.
Yeah, no, I mean, I will unapologetically reminisce about his time with the Bulls, because it's, like, probably my favorite era of Bulls basketball, other than when I was a little kid watching the team that, like, everybody else also loved. So, to give you a bit of context about, like, how his career came to be and the ups and downs of it before I get into the list. Derrick Rose he's a kid from inner city Chicago, and through somewhat miraculous and incredibly lucky circumstances, ended up getting drafted by his hometown Chicago Bulls with the number one overall pick in the 2008 NBA draft. And what made this so miraculous is the fact that the Bulls had a 1.7% chance of getting that number one pick. Like, when they do the draft lottery, it's weighted where if you're the worst team, you get X number of ping pong balls. And then if you're, like, in the lottery but on the cusp, you get, like, two. And so for the Bulls that year, there was no reason that they should have gotten the number one pick, and it just happened that way. And then the fact that it also lines up for them to draft, like, a hometown player was kind of the perfect storyline. So Rose's impact on the Bulls was immediate. He got Rookie of the Year honors in 2009. He made his first All-Star team in his sophomore season. And I believe that was the year, it's one of my favorite videos, where, like, I think that was the game they did in front of, like, 80,000 people at Cowboys Stadium. And Rose comes out with LeBron and everybody, and they're all, like, dancing. And he's just standing there, like, completely still, not wanting to participate in any of it.
Great video.
It's just a very funny, like, juxtaposition of, like, LeBron and Wade, you know, twerking, and Rose just being like, I don't want to do
I would love to play basketball and go home. Thank you.
Yeah. But Rookie of the Year's first year. All-Star his second year, became the youngest MVP in league history the third season that he played. But then, starting with an ACL tear in the 2012 playoffs, his career would be hampered by injury after injury. After being traded to the Knicks in, I would say, a fairly shocking move in 2016, Rose bounced around between the Knicks, the Cavs, the Timberwolves, the Pistons, the Knicks again, and then the Grizzlies before retiring after last season came to a close. And for a lot of fans, they talk about Rose in the context of what could have been. But for today, I want to talk about him for what was, which for me was genuinely, like, the happiest Bulls fan memories of my life, other than Jordan's second three-peat. But in some ways, and I don't know how you feel about this, like, in terms of the Knicks teams you grew up with versus the Knicks teams now, like, the Derrick Rose Bulls never made it to the mountaintop. They never won the championship. But in a way, they were more special for me because they were, like, my Bulls. Like, sure. I got to see them develop from being shitty to where they got. Like, I got to see them struggle. I got to see the development. And as special as it was watching the Jordan Bulls as a kid, I really only got to see, like, the fully formed product. Like, I wasn't alive to watch them get bullied by the Pistons and fail before succeeding. So this team, I feel like, has a special place in my heart for that. But let's get into the list. And to clarify, this is not really the definitive list of anything. It's just, like, my list of personal favorite memories from his tenure with the Bulls. And part of what makes this list special is, like, I just had a lot more time at this stage of my life, and I watched so many of these games live, and I feel like they're, other than, like, the playoffs, which the Bulls, you know, have opted out of for the past 10 years, I don't really watch a lot of NBA games live anymore. So the fact that a lot of these memories, I'm like, oh, I remember exactly where I was and who I was with, like, that always makes it kind of special as well. But I'm going to start with my regular season memories and then move on to the playoff ones. At number three on my regular season list, I have Derrick Rose's game winner against the Milwaukee Bucks in March of 2012. What made this one special was that it was a game where Rose was really struggling with his jumper the whole game, but then when it mattered the most, it was nothing but the bottom of the net. The great players are clutch regardless of the kind of day they're having. I feel like that's like one of the defining things about a great basketball player, and this moment was no exception. So with the game tied with 18 seconds remaining, he gets the ball at the top of the key, he lets the clock wind down, and as time expires, hits a nasty step-back jumper. This moment is iconic for three reasons. The first is that during this time when the Bulls were really good and the pre-Giannis Bucks were not, the crowd was like mostly Bulls fans in Milwaukee. In the same way that baseball reference, Cubs fans always make fun of the Brewers Stadium by calling it Wrigley North. Like the reaction to Rose hitting this jump shot, if you listen to it without knowing where it was, you'd be like, that's 1,000% in Chicago. There's no way there's that loud of a crowd pop. Almost like the Jeremy Lin game winner in Toronto where you're like, there's no way this is not a home game.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, it's kind of like what the Knicks have now with Barclays. Like, it's just all Knicks fans. And what's wild now is, like, especially the Knicks are good, anything that's along an Amtrak line, you hear "Let's go Knicks" chants.
Yeah.
Like, even it, you hear it in like Orlando games, Detroit games. Like, but recently we had two back-to-back games where there was a day off in between. Like, it was like December 27th and December 29th, or like 28th and 30th, mm-hmm. something like that. Both in DC against the Wizards, and it was like super Knicks home games. And like, yeah, if I was living in New York and didn't have a kid, like I would have taken the Amtrak down, gone to a game, crashed my buddy's place in DC, and then gone to the next game. So like,
and as you've always said, like it's cheaper to go to DC to watch the Knicks than to see them here.
Amtrak
like,
ticket,
paying for a train,
round
ticket,
trip,
even
Amtrak,
a hotel.
Yeah, totally. Round trip, Amtrak, and a ticket is going to be cheaper than something in MSG. So yeah, that's a fun phenomenon to have happen.
Yeah.
Going to baseball games growing up, like Yankee games in Camden Yards, which is a gorgeous baseball stadium where the Orioles play. Like you would hear very loud, "Let's go Yankees" cheers. And that was always
I mean,
so
you and
cool.
I both had that experience. The Yankees probably more so than the Cubs, but like going to Baltimore or even like when they play the Rays, because there's so many Yankees fans in Florida. Like it's basically another home game, and Cubs too. Like Cubs fans travel well, so any game I've ever been to, most of which have been road games, like there's always a pretty big contingent. And I think the Bulls are that way too. Like even though the Bulls suck now, like if you go to a Bulls Knicks game or Bulls Nets game, there's still like a good amount of people in Bulls stuff.
Totally.
So anyway, that's the first reason that this moment is special. Number two is that this was one of Bulls commentator Stacey King's most iconic calls. And after Rose hits the shot, he screams, "Let me step back and kiss myself," which doesn't really mean anything, but I like.
The step
and he
back
says, "MVP time." The Windy City Assassin does it again. And then he gets into his iconic Derrick Rose phrases, which are, "Big time players make big time plays," which he'll still say. Along with "too big, too strong, too fast, too good," which is something that he would always say about Rose. Yeah, "let me step back and kiss myself," like, means really nothing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's a step back jumper. I don't really get the kissing part because it's not like he like kissed it off the glass or something like that.
I don't know. Maybe it's some sort of phrase of getting ready. It's like, "let me go back a bit. I look good." Like back from a mirror. I don't know. But
oh, and he'll make like kissing sounds too. He'll still do it occasionally. It's ridiculous.
The step back that Derrick Rose does in this play is so funny. It's the most Derrick Rose step back ever because it's like, I mean, unsurprisingly, Derrick Rose exploded his knees because of the way in which he would jump and hop and land with stiff legs and all things you shouldn't do if you want to not have knee injuries. But this step back is like it travels like 30 feet and then he lands like in a 2 foot like hop. Like it's the most Derrick Rose step back to ever take place. It's very iconic of like, right, if Derrick Rose was going to do a step back jumper, it would look like this, like just big energy. He was so fun to watch, but is now in my 30s watching Derrick Rose highlights, it's just like, oh my god.
And Rose is, he's great with like the stank face celebrations where like when he does something really good, he'll just make this face that almost looks like he's like disgusted with himself. Now, the third thing that I like about this moment is that if you listen to the Bucks call of this game, and I was trying to find it and having trouble doing so, they are so salty and it's very, very funny. Like the call, as I remember it, is he hits the shot and then one of them just like in a very pissed off tone goes, "that must have been the first jumper he hit all day."
Oh,
and then it's just like
God.
Dead quiet as the Bulls are running on their court celebrating. And it's very, very funny.
That's like that's why I appreciate Mike Breen and Clyde Frazier so much is even if the Knicks had a dramatic game winner happen against them, they would be very excited and animated, which is good because sometimes you get stuck watching the other team's broadcast for whatever reason. And I hate when the Knicks are playing the Rockets or someone with like really homer announcers that just can't like, it just takes you out of it. Like, I will watch games on mute instead of with really home-based announcers that just, like, can't be neutral, or at least, or like, at least can't even, like, appreciate greatness. Like, even if you're dunking on the Bulls the whole time, like, a game winner's a game winner. Like, that's awesome.
Right. And that's one of the things that I like about Stacey King a lot, is that he continuously is a homer in a big way, but he's also the first one to, like, criticize the Bulls when they're not playing well, or give it up for the other team when they do something impressive. And I think that's, like, a good balance. And I would say that, like, Clyde and Breen are like that too. Like, obviously they're very pro Knicks, they're Knicks commentators, but, like, they'll be honest about what's happening in the game.
One of the most famous Walt Frazier calls is when Andre Bargnani shoots that three when he could have held it and let time run out and they could have won the game, and Walt goes, "What is he doing, folks?" Like, it's the most memorable Walt Frazier call that isn't, like, a rhyming catchphrase that I can think of. During those bad Knicks years, like, him and Breen would just, like, go in on the Knicks. It was like, it's what you want. It makes now, when they're happy about them, it just makes it so much more enjoyable.
Totally. All right. At number two on the list, I'm going to go with my vote for best dunk of Rose's career, when he absolutely yammed it on Goran Dragic's head in Phoenix. Yeah. This is one that, like, even casual NBA fans know about. Part of what I love about a lot of these is that they take place when the Bulls are on the road, and there's nothing sicker than getting oohs and ahs from a crowd that's rooting against you.
Correct.
Like, when you do something that's so objectively nasty that even people who want their home team to win are like, holy shit.
Or like when the opposing team's bench, like, kind of startles and they're like, we can't,
sorry, there's a Koch report countdown of, like, other teams' bench reacting to nasty dunk or whatever. But this is a 2010 game against the Suns. Tyrus Thomas, Bulls legend Tyrus Thomas, passes it to Derrick Rose on a fast break. And Goran Dragic, a great player in his own right, who also had a pretty impressive vertical, foolishly tries to go up to contest it. Rose cocks it back with two hands and violently throws it through the rim on his head, getting an and-one opportunity. Once again, it is Stacey King's call of the play that makes this very iconic. And for this one, there's no way I can even do it justice, so I'm just going to insert the sound clip.
Lead pass,
Dragic. Somebody grab Dragic's set. Do you know who this kid is? He is from Chicago. He has a 40-inch vertical. And you are, where is my poster machine? This is what I need, my poster machine. Where is it at? Oh, my goodness.
So good. It's a great call.
It's great. Yeah, and I mean, Stacey King continues to be a terrific commentator, but his work during Rose's early years really defined his career and his voice. And the energy that he brought every night kind of matched Rose's energy on the court, which was kind of a perfect pairing. But I think this dunk, more than any other play in Rose's career, really exemplifies how ridiculously explosive this guy was.
I mean, it's his head on the backboard. Like, come on.
Yeah, it's outrageous. And he's, I mean, he's not, like, small, but he's not, he's, I think, 6'4"?
6'4",
maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. At number one, this is the top regular season moment for me. We have another game winner from Rose, not a buzzer beater, but this time it was at the Staples Center in Los Angeles against the Kobe Bryant-led Lakers on Christmas Day of 2011. This was the first game of the season because that season began late due to a lockout.
Wow.
So after the Bulls' incredible regular season and playoff run in 2011, it was torturous waiting an extra 2 months to see them play again. There was so much buildup, and in this first game of the season, the Bulls, they're losing by one with less than 20 seconds left. The Lakers have the ball. Rather than fouling immediately, the Bulls go for the steal. They actually get it. Luol Deng kicks it to Derrick Rose at the top of the key. And as time winds down, it's one of those moments where, like, the star player has the ball. Everybody starts, like, standing up in the audience. They all know he's going to take the shot. Rose goes to the lane. He puts up this beautiful one-handed floater over the outstretched hand of future teammate Pau Gasol and drills it with 4.8 seconds left. The Bulls ended up winning that game. They finished that shortened 66-game season at 50-16, which is like a 62-win pace. And then, obviously, unfortunately, Rose got injured that playoffs. It all kind of became unglued after that. But what was so special about this moment for me was that I was watching this game with my close buddy, Justin, who's a huge Kobe and Lakers fan. And the game, like, not only matching but exceeding the hype. I don't know. Christmas games always, like, hit a little different, and I feel like this one was, in my life, like, the one that I remember the most.
Yeah, no, there's always something special about a Christmas Day game. And if you can get some sort of game winner or game winning shot, even if it's not a buzzer beater, Super hype.
Yeah, it was pretty sick. So real quick, let me get to the playoff moments. At number three, I have a moment that is seared into my memory, and interestingly, doesn't even involve Rose being on the court. But during his MVP season, the Bulls were poised to go all the way, and a lot of people really thought they had a chance, myself included, and I don't think it was even like delusional at that point. They were the best team in the regular season that year. But the only thing standing in their way to get to the finals was the, at the time, hated big three of the Miami Heat in LeBron's first season with Bosh and Wade. The two teams matched up in the conference finals. And part of what was so fun about it was like, it felt like everybody in the world other than specifically LeBron or Heat fans was rooting for the Bulls during that series. In game one, a close game in the first half turned into a blowout in favor of Chicago in the second half. So much so that Rose wasn't even playing in the fourth quarter, which if you know anything about Tom Thibodeau, pretty surprising. But earlier in that game, Taj Gibson had thrown down this nasty dunk on Dwayne Wade on a fast break. And then in the fourth quarter, with the Bulls up big and mostly subs in, CJ Watson takes a shot from the top of the key. He misses it. And Taj Gibson throws down, honestly, I think like one of the best putback dunks ever. Like it's this violent dunk and the stadium erupts. And what I remember about this moment is that they cut to the Bulls bench and Rose, who I've mentioned is usually like very subdued, is like absolutely losing his marbles celebrating what his teammates are doing. And to me, it's meaningful because like Rose was known as a very kind of reserved guy. And this exemplifies something that you've heard a lot about Rose, especially recently, which is that he was an incredible teammate. And I think nothing speaks more to that than the fact that over 30 of his former teammates showed up this past weekend, some from as far as Australia. Luol Deng literally flew back from Africa to be there. So I feel like the MO with a lot of great players is that they weren't particularly good teammates, even Michael Jordan. And the fact that there's been plenty of other stuff that you can dissect about Rose's career and life, but there's never been a whisper of him like being a shitty teammate, at least not that I'm aware of, which I think is like a pretty cool legacy to have.
Yeah. My favorite thing about that dunk is that Taj rips it out of his teammate Omer Asik's hand in order to dunk it. He steals it from Omer.
He dunks on his teammate as well as the Heat.
It's so good.
It's pretty funny. At number two, I have Rose's first playoff game against the Boston Celtics. And this was in what turned out to be an epic series where the upstart Bulls pushed the defending champion Boston Celtics to seven games.
Really
it's like one of the best series ever.
Good.
The Bulls stunned the Celtics in game one in Boston with a 2-point victory in which the 20-year-old Rose dropped 36 points and 11 assists in his official coming out party. Part of what was so cool about this moment was that it mirrored another iconic performance, which was a young Michael Jordan putting up 63 against Larry Bird and those iconic Celtics in the old Boston Garden. Now, while the Bulls would ultimately lose the series, the fact that they battled so hard against that Boston team gave them a huge amount of confidence that they kind of rode into the following seasons and then set the stage for all the special moments that were to come in subsequent years. It was one of those things where, like, you knew that they weren't ready yet. Like, even if they won that series, they're going to get knocked out in the next round anyway. But it was that first moment where you're like, all right, we might have something here.
So
like,
many great teams have that.
Playing
like
hard.
The Warriors when they almost beat the Spurs that one year before they went on to really become the Warriors. You kind of have a lot of these things. The OKC Thunder, you know, when they, I think they beat the Lakers or they almost beat the Lakers in the first round one year. Like this is like the Harden, Westbrook, KD Thunder. Like you'll have those sorts of like, man, they were so close. Like it's earlier than we anticipated kind of moments. So those are always fun to see. Even if you don't win, you remember it fondly. It's like, oh, remember when we almost beat so-and-so? That was nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think as a fan, like obviously you're disappointed anytime your team loses, but there's something to be said for being like, honestly, I think this team got as far as it could go. Like with the talent that they had, like they weren't going to win the championship that year, but to like push a team that good, like that Celtics team was so good.
Yeah.
And for the Bulls to push them to the brink was a very cool and I think like telling moment early on in Rose's career. But at number one, I have the most meme/gifable moment of Rose's career, his game winner against the LeBron-led Cavaliers in game three of the 2016 playoffs. What puts this moment at number one on my list is that it came after all of Rose's struggles, after his torn ACL, after his torn meniscus, after people had basically written him off. So tied 1-1 in the series with the game on the line in game three at the United Center, Rose catches the inbounds pass. He runs to the top right-hand side of the key and launches this like high-arcing three as the buzzer sounds. Kind of like the Kawhi Leonard moment over the Sixers. It was one of those moments where like, I feel like the NBA did a commercial series like this, but it was like time kind of stood still. Like the ball's in the air, everybody's watching it. It's like, it felt like it happened in slow motion, but he shoots this three. The ball banks in. I don't know if he called bank, but he definitely called game. The stadium erupts, and then Rose jumps into Joakim Noah's arms like backwards. So like Rose is holding him like he's giving him like a Heimlich maneuver. And Rose just has this very like weird deadpan look on his face as if to say like, yeah, you're fucking right. And it was very much a culmination of all of his hard work to get back on the court after everything he had been through. While the Bulls would obviously go on to lose that series to the eventual champion Cavs, it's definitely a moment that I'll never forget, and kind of the final like nice memory of Rose before he got traded that offseason. So all that to say, you know, while it might be trite given the utter mediocrity from the Bulls since his departure, when it comes to Rose's tenure in Chicago, I'm not going to be sad that it's over. I'm going to be thankful that it happened. So that's my 3-on-3.
Yeah. Pretty good. I mean, anytime you have to give credit when NBA players make a game winner and then don't just like scream and freak out and everything, like to stay deadpan is nuts. And like Trae Young did this when recently he had that wild, like it was a couple days ago, like a full half quarter, a couple steps behind the half court line buzzer beater to win the game. And then he just immediately just like smiles, waves, and then does the like cold ice tray celebration. Yeah. Like the wherewithal to be able to do something like that. And like if I, you know, you think of all the cool things you would do if you hit a game winner. But for me, I know that if I did, I would just be like, ah! Like I would just scream and run around. Like I would not do anything.
It's almost like more
cool.
Swaggy to not celebrate because it implies like, oh, I knew I was going to make that. So like I'm not thrown by it.
No.
I knew that was going in.
No, you just freak out. You just got to freak out. But no. Great, great little 3-on-3. And then now we'll get into it. That actually happened. This one is also timeline relevant because we're recording this one on January 9th. We are releasing it after that, and we will be releasing it closer to Martin Luther King Day. And the NBA always does some stuff on Martin Luther King Day. There's usually a bunch of games that happen like throughout the day, kind of like a Christmas day where they'll have early games and matinee games and all kind of stuff like that, which is cool. Usually the whole week they will wear Martin Luther King inspired warm-up jerseys, whether they have like quotes or some sort of message or just something letting you know that it's MLK Day week or whatever. But did you know, Adam, that in 1968, the year he was assassinated, like months later, that NBA All-Stars got together for an outdoor exhibition / telethon Martin Luther King Day game?
No, that's very cool. Was that like the unofficial first?
So this is
game in his honor. I mean, obviously, the Martin Luther King Day hadn't been officially
correct
added to, as a holiday at that point.
Right. So this was the first thing to celebrate it. The time it was actually like officially done with the NBA was in 1986, which was when it became a federal holiday. So they wasted no time getting on it once it was an official actual holiday. But yeah, in 1968. Tragically, Martin Luther King was assassinated in Memphis in April of that year. And because of how the NBA schedule goes on, the Eastern Conference Finals were going on at that moment in time. But Oscar Robertson, who was not participating in them, he was the head of the National Basketball Players Association. This is the people who negotiate the contracts and they represent the players and do a bunch of other stuff. He was the president, and game one of the Eastern Conference Finals was going on. And he was like, look, I don't care. We got to do something to recognize Martin Luther King. So he got together and he had met with people from the NBPA and some other players and tried to figure out what can we do to commemorate Dr. King's legacy, because a lot of NBA players in the 60s had met Dr. King and had meetings with him. And, you know, player activism goes way back. And there were a lot of NBA players who like had good relationships with Martin Luther King. So players start agreeing to do a memorial game during the offseason. So they're not going to do something that like competes with the playoffs, but a bunch of players are like, yeah, you know, when the season's over, I'm down, let's do something. So you've got Oscar Robertson organizing this. You also have Lenny Wilkins of the Atlanta Hawks. He had apparently met Martin Luther King and played a game of hearts with him when he was at a stopover in Birmingham between exhibition games. And like, that's just a cool story. Then you've got Al Attles, who joined in afterwards when he was at North Carolina A&T. He heard Dr. King speak at a nearby college, and he just really enjoyed that speech and just felt like, yes, I want to do anything that I can to pay homage to this guy's legacy. So Oscar Robertson got 27 NBA players to play in this game, and they agreed upon playing it on August 15th, and they played it in the Singer Bowl. Are you familiar with the Singer Bowl? It is a stadium that I don't think exists anymore. I think it might be in like the old Arthur Ashe complex, because this is where they did the 1964 World's Fair in Queens, New York.
In Flushing?
Yeah. So I think it used to be in that complex that is now kind of more renovated, and it's where they do the U.S. Open. Because I tried looking it up. I don't think it exists anymore. So I'm pretty sure that it has now been like replaced with, you know, the big major tennis facility, which is a public park. Fun fact for anyone, if you have your New York City tennis membership, you can play there. I think anything sick. Except for like the major courts. I don't think you could play at Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Yeah,
it would be so cool if you could, though. But this is an outdoor blacktopped venue, so you could play basketball on it. Like, I'll put a link to an image of it, but like, it's this very cool old school looking stadium. It has like a suspended megaphone system. Like, there's no roof because it's outdoors, but there's like wires that go all across. So there's like this hovering speaker system over the middle of it. It's super cool. So they decide to do it there in August of that year, and they're going to also raise money for this. They had the game, they obviously charged tickets, and then they did a telethon simultaneously, and they were going to split the proceeds between Dr. Martin Luther King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference and then New York City Mayor John Lindsay's Youth and Physical Fitness Fund. So this is something that wasn't like super foreign to the NBA in terms of like playing outdoor games. There's obviously iconic outdoor courts in New York like Rucker Park, and you would have, especially back in time, like players would do this in the offseason, like just to get runs in. Now, how you'll see now, like players going into Lifetime Fitness or fancy gyms in New York to like play during the offseason. Dr. J famously would, you know, play a bunch of outdoor games and stuff, and people would go and see. So this is something that back then wasn't ridiculous, but there's a good article that I got a lot of information about this from Sports Illustrated that we'll link to. And they quoted Earl Monroe, Knicks legend, about it. At the time, he was playing with the Baltimore Bullets, and he said that, like, today this would never happen. He was like, there's absolutely no way the NBA and the owners would allow, like, an exhibition off-season game, especially, like, outdoor on blacktop. Like, absolutely
not. Yeah, because the other thing, I was just trying to look up on my phone, like, what was the temperature that day? Like, mid-August? August on blacktop in New York City. Like, I know the world is getting hotter, and that's probably a story for another day, but it had to have been really hot.
Yes, I'm sure.
Mid-August in New York is no joke.
Yeah, it was still in the evening, but like, yeah, it was probably a toasty one. So they end up organizing this, putting it together, selling tickets and everything. They actually have a cool like printout of the poster, like this cool like old school poster of it. Gosh, I would have loved to do this. But in addition to having NBA players in attendance there, they also had two very high-profile college players there. Lou Alcindor, who you might know, is the man who later changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He had just played in the championship game, UCLA versus Houston, and he played against Houston's Elvin Hayes. Both of them were in attendance as well in the game. I don't know that they played. I think they just attended based on the articles that I was reading about it, but they were there. And then they also quoted Kareem for this article, and he was saying, like, look, Dr. King was everything good about this country, and he believed in this country, even though it was this country. He wanted to be there to support as well. So then they broadcast the game on a local television program, and that helped raise money as well. And tip-off was at 8 p.m. And just what do you think? This is a game in 1968 with 27 NBA stars. What do you think ticket prices were? There's a range. So there's the lowest price and the highest price. What do you think the least expensive ticket was and the most expensive ticket was in 1968?
I'm going to say, in 1968, prices ranged from $1 all the way up to $10.
You're not that far off. $2 to $5.
Wow.
And like,
so you could sit courtside for $5 and watch some of the greatest players of all time.
Yeah, just ridiculous. Yeah, so between $2 and $5 to see like some of the most high-profile NBA players. For example, the top two MVP vote-getters from that season, Wilt Chamberlain and Lenny Wilkins, were on the same team. And they did divide the teams in classic All-Star Game style. It was East versus West. I love that they don't have to do it, but they were like, we're doing it, baby. It was still East versus West. There's a photo that I saw a tweet about this game, and there's not a lot of photos of this game, but we'll put that on the episode page, where they're like wearing MVP PA jerseys, which is just like, can you imagine? If someone had one of those jerseys, it has to be like a wild collector's item of like from the unofficial, you know, but official with the MBPA, yeah. Martin Luther King 1968 game. Like, it's so wild. So
I do just want to mention, and I think this speaks to like how expensive sports tickets have gotten in general, but even taking inflation into account,
yeah.
$5 in 1968 is approximately worth $32 now. Like, that is...
Yeah, I think it's just nothing. The NBA was not as popular back then.
No, of course.
And it's just...
I think if it had been, like, a baseball exhibition, maybe they would have charged more, sure. Because, like, that was kind of the main sport at that time,
right.
But it's still unbelievable.
Yeah, we get to the most depressing line from this Sports Illustrated article, quote, "And in the half-filled stands, 7,500 fans watched two Knicks, Willis Reed and Walt Bellamy, lead the scoring with 12 points each for the East." Half filled, $2 to $5 tickets in New York, half filled. Come on.
Don't you think, though, in those days, first of all, I appreciate that they said half filled instead of half empty, so at least, you know, optimistic point of view. But, you know, now... The algorithm knows us so well that, like, if something like that were happening, it would absolutely show up in our feeds just because of,
sure.
like, what we watch.
Right.
I often wonder, like, how many events took place without people even having any idea that they could have gone?
Yeah.
Like, in those days, unless you saw a newspaper advertisement or happened to see something on TV about it, like, how would you even know?
Yeah, no idea. So there was... other great play, Dave DeBuscher, who also became a Knicks legend at the time. He was a Piston. He was there. And, of course, the players played super hard. Dave DeBuscher, like, severely sprained his ankle in the game. Like,
sure.
It was an intense thing.
I mean, it wouldn't be a Blacktop game without at least someone getting grievously injured.
Of course. So the final score ended up being 77-61. The East, led by Oscar Robertson, beat the West, led by Will Chamberlain. And, you know, in classic Will Chamberlain form, he put up good numbers but didn't win the game. So they raised $85,000 with this two-hour telethon as well, and all the players were just like so happy to be a part of it. And, you know, looking back now, they're all super happy that it happened, and they're just, you know, recognizing that, like, this is a rare thing that happened, and we were just so happy to be a part of it and try to honor his legacy as immediately as we can. And then something else I learned, I didn't realize this, but when the NBA now has MLK games, they always have a game in Atlanta, where, you know, nearby where he's mm-hmm. from, and then they always have a game in Memphis where he was assassinated. I didn't know that that was the case. And there was an article about Oscar Robertson looking back on this, because they did like some look backs on iconic NBA moments for the NBA 75 when it was the 75th year of the NBA, which was like a couple years back. And what's funny mm-hmm. is the article, it says, like, this year's game in Atlanta features the Hawks playing surprise of the season, the Chicago Bulls. Cause it was like that year that they were good. And then they extended like Vucevic and everybody. And I was like, oh no, yeah. Poor Adam. But that is the MLK game. And that actually happened.
Very cool. Very cool. I believe, have you been to Memphis?
I have, but not for anything that isn't like an event. So I've not like explored around.
I have not been, but I believe the Lorraine Motel, which was where Dr. King was assassinated, I think at some point they were going to like tear it down or something like that. And then people stepped in and they were like, first of all, you can't do that because this is an important place.
Totally.
But it's now been made into a civil rights museum.
Oh, that's so good. That's very
fitting.
I think
the whole like lower level of it is a museum. So it's something that I've wanted to go to, but
very
I've never,
cool.
I've never been to Memphis. So
yeah,
at some point I'll have to make that
make
trip.
It happen. But yes, that actually happened.
Very cool.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Horse Horses, hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schubert. Our editors, Kenzie Saramaki. The music is by Tina Campomanes. The art's by Allison Wakeman. The website's by Kelly Schubert. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry's two-point buzzer beater was ridiculous.
Bang!
Hi, Trish, Chase Underulu, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Hurley. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because...
Horse Hoops decided that they don't want to play for the Heat, and Pat Riley was like, get it out of here, get it done.
That can be dicey. You can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to the many things we talked about today, including a lot of Derrick Rose highlights and perhaps a photo of that old poster if you have it, because I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And if you want to support the Horse Boys, you can go to patreon.com/horsehoops. A lot of cool perks and stuff over there. You can also go to horsehoops.com/merch and get physical things like Sup Nerds and basketball shirts and digital things like wallpapers. We have ones that are colored for every single NBA team. So we're going to close this episode out, as we always do, by putting our hands in the middle and saying something on the count of three. Anything in mind?
I don't know. I mean, our last few have been layups because, you know, it's been the holidays. But what do we have for... you know what? I'll tell you what. By the time our next episode comes out, it will be post MLK Day. So why not a thank you, Dr. King?
Sure.
Because this year, the inauguration is the same day as Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah, that's going to be
I'm
going to
be celebrating Martin Luther King that day.
I will be not in America, which is going to be good. I'm very happy to be in
you.
A different country on that day.
Where are you going to be?
I'll tell you off recording because I don't think I'm legally allowed to. I think I'm under.
Oh
yeah. Uh huh. I think I am.
Oh my god.
I know. Zip zip, baby.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, in any case, thank you, Dr. King. On three.
All right. One, two, three. Thank you, Dr. King.
Thank you, Dr. King.